Welcome to Military Transition Stories, the podcast where we talk with veterans and military spouses about their experience in the military, their transition out, and how their experiences have helped them get to where they are now. My name is Trey Tatro. I'm a realtor in the Washington, D.C. area and your host. For more episodes and content, please visit militarytransitionstories.com. And if you enjoy this episode, please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Today, we're talking with John Rubino, a Navy veteran who served honorably as a lieutenant commander and naval aviator for 20 years, holds a Master of Science from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and has found significant success as a real estate investor and consultant. John is the founder, COO, and co-managing partner of JID Investments, a real estate, private money, and equity investment firm which seeks high-yield returns with medium risk by providing investment capital to residential, commercial, and mixed-use opportunities here in the Washington, D.C. area, as well as across the South and Mid-Atlantic markets. JIDI's investments target annual returns of 15 to 20% for investors who subscribe to units within an investment project typically ranging from 25 to 50,000 with the option to invest multiple units if applicable. John, why don't you tell us what it was that drew you into the Navy and got you started there?
Sure. Thanks, Trey, again for having me today. I'm excited to be on the podcast and to talk with your listeners. You know, I was a 20-year Navy vet. I joined the Navy way back in 1997. Was able to graduate college in New York with a degree in business administration, my commission in the Navy, and also a third mate's license in the Merchant Marine. So I had a lot of options, which was great. But I chose the military path, and I guess Tom Cruise and Top Gun had a lot to do with that, but I was really excited to be a pilot. I was, my dad was a Marine. I had family that were all in the military and served honorably. I also went to military high school, so I guess it was in my blood to be in the military, and I really loved the tradition, the prestige, and the honor of being in the Navy and serving my country in that service. So it was exciting. Flew for 20 years, learned a ton, as you can imagine. Kind of felt like I should have got a psychiatry degree or a psychologist degree when I got out, because, you know, you learn so much. You learn about people, you learn about communication skills, you learn to read personalities and how to kind of understand people. So that's helped me out immensely in business, which has been exciting. But I started my business, my last 5 years in the Navy, back in 2013 timeframe. I've been in real estate for about 15 years while I was serving down in Southern Maryland, and I just kind of picked it up through some friends and mentors that were both in the Navy, people that I knew, and it just caught fire, and it was exciting. So I just started to start doing fix and flips, rehabs, single family, foreclosures, probates, you name it, I was doing everything. And, you know, I was learning the hard way and just learning through my mistakes and my failures, but it made me better, it made me smarter. And I guess over the next 10 years of my time in the Navy, I started investing passively. I started investing in condo deals, and I started investing in long-term holds. And I started to learn the due diligence, the analysis, the research that was required for an investor of what you need to look at when you look at these deals. And so that grew my kind of, you know, capacity of understanding what deals look like and the questions to ask and how to best organize that stuff. And so in 2013, I reached out to my accountant at the time, who's now my business partner, and I kind of pitched to him what I was thinking of doing. And we together both decided, hey, let's put together something that we can kind of release to folks that are interested in us helping them raise funds, and also to go out to maybe a pool of people that we could talk to that could help us bring funds into the business. So our role in our company for JID Investments is we're a syndication business. We're a liaison between the partners, developers, and sponsors that we work with that have a need for funds and capital. Most of the time it's private money or equity, which comes behind your bank lenders. And then we also work with a pool of investors that started as friends and family, people I worked with in the Navy. My business partner owns an accounting firm down in Hilton Head, so he's got clients that were interested in friends down there. And so you fast forward to 2019, just 6 years over business, we've completed 15 projects. We've invested about $6.5 million of equity capital on projects in Washington, D.C., in Atlanta, Georgia, mid-Atlantic and Southern Atlantic states. And we earned about $2.25 million of revenue. So our investors are making 15-20% on each project per annum on their investment. Again, you know, results vary on each deal. We put together our projects on a project by project basis. We're not a fund. So basically projects come in, David and I review them. If it's through a partnered business, we've already given a thumbs up to fund and approve for funding. Then we will bring the projects forward to our investors after we review it and do the due diligence on the projects. And then we raise our funds through our network of investors. And like I said, each project goes through a very strict due diligence process to vet these deals to make sure that they meet our criteria. And then at that point, you know, we're raising money, our own money, our investors' money to bring into the deal to the developers. And typically the projects that are the bigger ones, you know, where we're bringing in anywhere from, I'd say, $500,000 to $5 million a project, can range anywhere from about 18 to 48 months with, again, the returns being combined or compounded annualized at about 15 to 20%. Investors like working with us because they see the business before they see the projects. You know, a lot of times with crowdfunding and, you know, CrowdStreet, Realty Shares, they have a platform. And if you want to invest, you go to their platform and you see all these deals, right? And the deals have a date that they need investment. And so they're looking for projects to fund, you know, right off the bat. Whereas with us, we want our investors to see our business, understand our model, look at our process, come out and see projects, get comfortable, become an investor. And then once they become an investor, they have the opportunity to see projects we have ready once they're ready to fund. But there's no commitment or obligation to lend or fund or invest with us until they see a project they want to fund or invest on. We work with an attorney up in New York who puts together what's called a private placement memorandum. We file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. So our investments come in sanctioned and filed with the SEC so that the investors are protected, the business is protected. And then we take our investment and we dovetail it under management as part of an investment vehicle as a limited partner to then be part of the project. So the benefits of that are you're not investing, you're not having to worry about any personal guarantees on bank debt. You're not liable for that as investors. You're coming in as a limited partner. So you're not, you know, the biggest risk really is your money. Your money's exposed. And in a second position, you're behind the bank. So if the bank has to liquidate and the valuation of the land or the deal comes down, you know, there is the potential of you losing a portion of your money or all of your money. And that's the biggest risk with us. Now, how do we mitigate that? We work with very experienced partners and developers that have been through a cycle shift, a recession. We're picking very good locations. Washington, D.C. is a fantastic location, Trey. We have Amazon, too, coming, HBO headquarters. We have the government here. So a lot of absorption here in D.C.
You mentioned, you know, D.C. having Amazon HQ2 and government. But, you know, I think one of the things that people don't realize, or at least they don't think of when they think D.C., but there's a lot of corporate headquarters out in this area as well. Across a broad spectrum of industries. It's not just defense companies. You know, you do have the defense and you do have the government and you do have the corporate headquarters. And then of course, you know, the newest or the biggest one everyone's talking about being added, like you said, Amazon's HQ2 being added to the area as well. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the DC area is definitely a great area for investment and for real estate.
No, and you have three major markets. You have D.C., you have Maryland, and you have Virginia, right? Yep. So I mean, we're in Emerald City here, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to real estate. But the problem we're having here right now in D.C. is that, as you probably know, the valuation of land and the valuation of property is just skyrocketing. So it's very difficult. Yeah. And again, this goes back to how we mitigate deals, is that it's very difficult to find something where your margins are where they need to be in order to satisfy both the parameters of the business and to meet the needs and the criteria of what we want to get to our investors. So we typically want to make about a 30% annualized return on our money. And so if I'm bringing in $1 million, my goal is to make 300K a year on that. So your margins have to be very healthy. So that means you got to get in at a very good price to buy the land or buy the site. you have to have good construction costs, or at least controllable construction costs to the best of your ability, which nowadays construction costs are just outrageous. Mm-hmm. And then you have to rely on, or at least depend on, a good, strong market that's got growth and appreciation that is not maybe necessarily what we've seen over the last 10 years in this bull market, but sustained growth that at least shows that there's healthy growth, whether it's population, job market, manufacturing plants coming in to build headquarters. Atlanta is just booming right now. There's so much coming to Atlanta. There's a lot of businesses coming to Atlanta. The population is now 9th, soon to be 8th largest city in the country. There's people buying property there. So if you can get into Atlanta at an affordable rate, given what they experienced in the recession, which were pretty rough, they got crushed. Atlanta is a great city. So we're kind of nitpicking what markets look good, what locations look good to get us those returns. And then we're also underwriting our deals with our sponsors to have a contingency plan so that if there is a correction, if there is a recession, God forbid, we're okay because we're not going to lose money. Right. We may take a little bit less of a return, but at the same time, we're going to be able to weather the storm in those down cycles.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you guys are kind of targeting areas that tend to have things that are really going for them. I mean, we talked about DC, but then I haven't lived in Atlanta, so I can't speak to everything that's there, but I know that they are known as being sort of a logistical and transportation hub because of all the, you know, the airlines, and that's where Delta is based out of. And I think everybody who's flown kind of knows that if Atlanta goes offline for a flight or for weather or anything like that, then it tends to screw over pretty much the entire East Coast when it comes to flying.
Exactly. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's why we're looking at those markets, because you get these great businesses, great companies that we're seeing come in. So just to give you a quick heads up, like Norfolk Southern, which is one of the nation's premier transportation companies, is relocating from Norfolk to Atlanta. So that's going to bring 850 high paying jobs to that market. Like, you know, right off the bat, you know, right. Instantly. Invesco, which is one of the world's leading investment managers, they're going to expand their global headquarters to Atlanta. That's 500 jobs and an investment of about $70 million mm-hmm. as part of their expansion. You know, the filming industry, there's 33 TV movies and shows and TV and movies being filmed in Georgia.
Yep.
So that's 92,000 people that are being employed, and it adds about $10 billion with a B to that Atlanta market. So that's why we like Atlanta. That's why we see growth in Atlanta, because there's a lot of good things that are coming. And a lot of the people that live north of DC, maybe even north of Philly, they're starting to see that taxes are just starting to become so overburdening for them. So they're matriculating south. They're going to Georgia. They're going to South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, DC. Because it's a lot more, cost of living is much more affordable. Quality of life is better. You got good weather. Jobs are coming. So it's like, you know, why would you not want to be in those markets that are attracting higher population, higher growth with lower inventory to potentially invest? So that's why we're hitting those markets.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think things like WeWork are also going to help with the idea of, you know, people being able to spread back out to, you know, other cities or even more so into the suburbs, because it'll start to allow people, you know, to work remotely. And that idea is becoming more and more common mm-hmm. For people to work remotely, at least part-time or fully remotely. So, you know, having that ability and being able to do that makes it a little easier for people to move to those areas where they have, like you said, a little bit better cost of living while still being able to maintain those jobs that they had that they previously would have had to stay in, you know, perhaps a higher cost of living area to keep that job.
Yeah, that's right. And so to circle back to your original question, you know, the transition and how I got started and everything, I think really it's just been a blessing to just be around good people that had helped me get started. And look, I'm learning every day. I mean, you learn every day. You have to understand that, you know, you learn different things. So you got to allow yourself to do that. You got to be humble. And so, you know, the 20 years I did with the Navy taught me a ton. I was able to, you know, start real estate while I was still in, which was a blessing. The last 5 years gave me the opportunity to start the business, experience what it was like to have your own company, go through the growing pains of starting a business while I was still in the Navy. So every 2 weeks, you know, I was still getting that paycheck. as I was growing the company, so that at the 5-year point when I retired in 2017, the transition and, you know, the step off, which was still very apprehensive, into the business full time was kind of, you know, it was already automatic because I had been doing it, you know, almost full time, part time. And now it was really just, hey, I can do this full time. I got the confidence to do this full time. I got the people in place that I know are going to be able to help me. I'm in the market I've been operating in for the last 5, 6, 7 years. And the networking I did, the groups I joined, now I'm just speaking at these groups. I'm leading syndication groups. I go to different cities in the country and I visit and I meet new people. So it's like, you know, it's all coming together, which is great. And it all started really when I made that decision about 5, 6 years ago, now 7 years ago, that I wanted to start the business and get it going. And, you know, everything just kind of came together, which is great.
So how did that look for you, like starting this while you're in the military? I mean, what was your, you know, sort of time commitment when you were first getting started? Because, I mean, you know, for 5 years, you had a full-time job.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, obviously my commitment, my obligation was to the Navy. I mean, I'd get to work around 7:30 in the morning. I'd be done about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I got 4 kids and a wife, so obviously you got to spend a little time with them, right? Grab some dinner, hang out with the kids. But, you know, 7, 8 o'clock came around, the kids were going to bed and I was closing my office door and I'd come out when I came out. If it was good, I'll go back to work. I go back to work. If it was get a couple hours of sleep, get a couple hours of sleep. But, you know, when it was busy, it was busy. When it was a little slower, then it was a little slower. But we started the company about a full year before we launched it. So David, my business partner, and I, we basically put together everything. We put our website together. We put our documentation together. We put together everything that we felt was necessary to get the company in a position to be ready to go. And then, you know, through our friends and family, through people we knew that had 20, 30, 40 years of experience in the banking world and the mortgage lending world, commercial real estate world, we took everything and we gave it to these gentlemen and these people, and they beat the heck out of us because we thought we were ready. And these guys said, no, what about this? What about that? So another 3 to 4 to 5 months to get in getting our head beat up, which is fine.
Yep.
When they gave us back all of the information, when they gave us back everything that we made fixes to based on their suggestions and recommendations, it made us better. And not only that, those guys were the first ones to say, hey, we want to invest with you when you guys get this thing going, because, you know, we felt like we were so involved in it. You allowed us to be advisors. And that's what we bring to the table. When we have a deal that we bring forward to our investors, we tell them, please, even if you're not interested, because they have the option to invest or not, but please, at a minimum, just give us your feedback. What do you see? What do you think? What are some of the things that you think may be a challenge or something you need answered? Because a lot of times when we get their feedback, we kind of sometimes come across something maybe we didn't really scratch the itch enough on. So we go back to our sponsors and we grow them a bit. So it's really a team effort. We're not trying to stump the chump here. Everybody's working together on the same team. We're working with the sponsors to help them with the funding. Our investors are helping us, and we're helping our investors to make sure we have a good all-inclusive package that they like, that they want to invest on. And they feel comfortable that they can come to us and ask us anything they want. We're fully transparent. They want to come in to go to a project site, I'm there with them anytime they want to go. They want to walk the site. They want to talk to the sponsor. Absolutely. So I think that's what makes us unique, is we're kind of a hands-on mom-and-pop type business that really makes people feel comfortable given the level of risk on these types of investments.
And the types of investments in real estate investing that you guys are doing now is not the type of stuff that you're gonna see on HGTV. This is not your, you know, quick little fix and flip. I mean, you guys are into some pretty serious and pretty heavy projects at this point, for the most part.
For the most part. I will say though that, you know, we look at everything. We look at everything. We'll look at a senior assisted deal. We'll look at a storage facility deal. We'll look at ground up construction, multifamily condos. That's our sweet spot, right? We'll look at a single family renovation where if they need $100,000 or $200,000, we can bring that in. And the reason why those are good is because they're fast. 6 to 8 months, you're done with that deal. You're getting your money back out and you're able to deploy it back out again. So the investors like that because it's like, hey, I'm making a quick 12 to 15%, let's say, over 6 months. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to do that, right? So I would say that we look at the full spectrum, and what we call it is alternative investment opportunities, where, you know, we look at everything. And if it makes sense, we get our arms around it. It's in a good location. It's with a good sponsor. And we know that we've mitigated every risk that we can look at that we see. We're going to want to do it. And we're going to want to at least bring it to the investors. The other thing we're looking at too, which is pretty exciting now, is opportunity zones. We have some developers that are really good at it. And they're getting ready to stand up opportunity zone funds. So what that's nice is, let's say we have one of our larger projects that finishes. We have one that's finishing up first quarter next year. We invested $4.5 million. We're going to make $4.5 million to $5.5 million on that $4.5 million. That's all tax deferred gains. So our investors will have the opportunity to take those tax deferred gains, just the gains, not the investment,
right?
And roll that into an opportunity zone fund. And if they do that, now they get to enjoy the opportunity of just allowing the money to sit in that project. After 7 years, they get a basis knocked off, which means now they're only paying capital gains on 85% of the money they invested. If they stand for more than 10 years, anything they make on that tax deferred investment is tax free. Mm-hmm. So if I brought $1 million of tax deferred capital in, I'm in after 7 years, I only have to pay taxes now on $850,000. And then if I make another $2 million on top of the $1 million that I brought in after 10 years, it's tax free. So why not take advantage of that? And that is something we're seriously looking at as well.
So what was your first investment? Because I mean, you've done investments of all types, and you know, you've done holds and flips and full on developments, and you know, to the point now where you know you guys have multiple investors who are coming in on these and everything. But what was your first investment like?
My first investment personally was about 15 years ago in Southern Maryland. I was looking for stuff to do down there, to find stuff. And it was kind of similar to this market, very overvalued. People were like thinking, hey, you know, my beat up house is just as worth as that beautiful premier house I just sold, right? And that wasn't the case. So it was hard to find stuff. But then I connected with a local area builder in Southern Maryland. And for $1,000 investment, which was fully refundable, they're going to build me a brand new house. And I knew that on day 300 or 200 or whatever they were finished with the house, I would be able to sell it and make a substantial profit the next day. Mm-hmm. So I put in $1,000. I built a $285,000 house, and I closed on a Monday, and I sold it on a Tuesday for $360,000. So I made $60,000 in net profit. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. I did that again in another town in Southern Maryland. And then I took the money I made from those two deals. And then I made a nice amount of money in my primary residence. And I took about $200,000 to $300,000, and I invested it with one of the biggest developers I work with now, who's a guy I knew in the Navy for over 20 years. We're both best friends. And I said, hey, Scott, here's $300,000. What can you do for me here? He goes, well, I'll get you 10% a year. I said, okay. So I gave him the 300. We did a subscription agreement. And for 7 years straight, every year I was getting 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%. So that was awesome because I got the chance to do it actively. I got through the recession and I was able to invest and make 10% over 7 years passively. I learned about looking at deals that were sent over to me via, you know, an investment package, all the details of the markets I was investing in. So again, I grew my knowledge, and, you know, instead of when I got my money back with my returns, I said, you know what? I want to start bringing in money to his deals where I can bring him in on a project by project basis to make a bigger return. Mm-hmm. And if I can replicate that, I can help him get funded. You know, there's other people out there I can help. So that was the business model. And that's where I brought value. Because as a businessman, you got to say to yourself, how am I going to add value to the people I'm working with? Because if I can't add value, they don't need me.
Right.
And then what do they have that I need? So if you can answer those two questions, guess what? You should start a business, because you got something people need and you got something they value, and then they got something that you need. So we bring in a certain level of capital on our projects that the larger institutional funds and lenders and family offices, they don't want to spend time on. They want to bring in money at $20 million or more per project. We bring in between $100,000 to $5 million. So I'm under their radar scope. And the developers we work with like us because they know that if they come to me, they don't have to bring in 100% of the equity they need. They could bring in about 20%. I'll bring in the other 80. That gives them more powder to go out and get other projects to bring in. And so instead of doing one or two, they can do six or seven. And I can be involved in all six and seven with them because I'm going to be able to bring in 80% of the money.
Right.
That they get the equity stack completed. So That's right. Where we add value.
Yeah. So you said that there was, you know, a lot of learning that went into getting to where you are now from where you started. And obviously there has to be, because that's, again, that's a broad spectrum of investing that you've done. And there's just so many things that can change with each different, not only property type, but investment type as well. And, you know, depending on how you're going to get your returns out of that.
Sure.
How would you recommend for people who are, you know, maybe their first, you know, kind of getting started in this and they want to, you know, learn more? What are some of your favorite ways and resources that people can use to learn about kind of getting started with real estate investing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, if you're a local area in the DC, Virginia, Maryland area, there's several different networking groups you can go to. I'm happy to send you a list of the ones I go to. You can share with your listeners. But there's meetup groups you can go to that are centered on what your interests are, whether you want to do multifamily, you want to do active rehab, you want to do wholesaling, you want to do lending. So, you know, if you're local area here, you know, there's definitely meetup.com. You can go to that. You could go to those groups. You can go to those networking groups and you can be part of that. I'd say biggerpockets.com is another good website. People can go on, listen to the podcasts, listen to, post stuff on chat boards. That's also good. There's great books out there you can read. Dave Ramsey's always been good. He's kind of a little dated, but there's other books you can read. I love the Rich Dad Poor Dad collection for people to get started. But, you know, I would say sit down, and if you have an idea of what you want to do, whether it's being an investor to bring in capital just to invest, or you want to start a business, put a plan together. Talk to people that you know that are in business that can help you. LinkedIn is amazing. I mean, Trey, that's how you and I met.
Yep.
You know, LinkedIn is a great tool that you could find people. So let's say you want to be a syndicator. You want to be a commercial and residential real estate syndication business. I would go on LinkedIn and I would start looking at people that are in that business and just start seeing how they do their business. Who do they work with? What are some of the things they're doing? And try to network with them. You know, hey, My name's John Rubino. I'm looking at starting a syndication business. I see you're local. I'd love to buy you a cup of coffee and pick your brain a bit. Would you be up for that sometime? The next thing you know, you got a few mentors that are able to work with you. Maybe you apprentice with them a little, or you join them for do an intern with them for a summer or so, and let them kind of let you jump on their coattails and let them teach you a little bit about the business. A lot of people are willing to do that. You'd be surprised. I mean, a lot of people who are in business love to give back to people that are starting out. I know I do. I'm going to speak tomorrow night at a group, and it's going to be about syndication. And it's exciting because I get to tell them about what I do and how I got started. And you never know, you could help someone and give back, kind of like what I got, because I was mentored by so many people. I still am. I love to give back. So that would be what I recommend, you know, just to start. And then as you get better at things and as you get more into the process of getting the business up, definitely go and talk to like a real estate or business attorney. Get yourself set up with an accountant, someone that can help you with your entity formation and how to set that up. Whether you want to get a wealth management company to help you set stuff up. And as you get the business going, you got to think, all right, I'm making money. Now how do I keep it? What are some of the things I can set up for my business, like a SEP or a solo 401k, just to help yourself out as you get older and your benefits are growing? So that's kind of the path of how you would do that. And then if you're solo and you start doing really well and you're doing this on your own, maybe it's time to bring in some partners to help or people to outsource that are in areas that you need. For us right now, we're growing. David and I are growing. We have $11 million of equity in six or seven projects that are just going really well. And so my next thing is, who do I need to outsource to help me bring in more investors? Who do I need to outsource to help me do my due diligence on my projects? Who do I need to outsource to help me with business development and marketing? So these are the things I'm starting to deal with now, because I want to take a step back and focus more on the big picture of the business.
Right.
How to track the course rather than getting up every morning and going in the grind. I love the grind, don't get me wrong, but as you grow, you have to have people in place to help you with your company growing.
Yep.
And I'm not as good as I am in due diligence. I'm not as good in due diligence as I am going out and meeting people and networking. So I'm good at it, but I'd rather have someone that's great at it so that my packages have better eyes on and better analysis and reviews. So,
yeah. And I mean, you know, I think it's important to do that due diligence and learn the process of everything, because then when it does come time to outsource it, you know, like you said, maybe it's not something that you're best at and it's not your strong suit, but if you know how to at least do the basics of it, then you'll know if somebody else is A, capable of doing it and able to hire the right person. And then also, you know, you can make sure that they're doing it correctly when they first get started and that they're doing your way. And, or, you know, if there is a different way that they're doing it, you'll learn what that difference is instead of just saying, hey, I need you to do this and I hope you're doing it right.
Yeah, exactly. So we got two interns this summer that are working with us. One's from Clemson and one's from Stanford. Both are down in the Hilton Head area, and they're going to be helping us out. They're going to be doing things like researching the businesses that we're talking to, or they're going to be putting together packages for me to look at for presenting to my investors, or they're helping me with my calendar and my schedule. And it's been great because it's not only allowing me to help guys that are interested maybe in the business and one day becoming entrepreneurs, but it also allows me to see how I need to put things together if I'm going to have somebody do it full time. So it's kind of like a learning experience both me and for that. And so it's been great so far. They've been helping me out. And at the same time, I'm learning that if I bring on a full-time executive assistant, these are the things I need to think about. So that works out really well.
So two more questions, because I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you've got a busy day.
That's great. Yet. Thanks.
First one, you know, I just have to ask, because you were in the military and there are, you know, there are different benefits that are available to people who are in the military than those who haven't served. Mm-hmm. So were there any benefits that you were able to use as a result of in the military that were able to help you get started with your investment side, or at least to help you, maybe not to get started, but to help you kind of grow and really get yourself to when you did leave, you were in a position to where you could just step into your new, you know, your new company and
sure.
have a smooth transition.
Yeah, there's a course I took right before I got out. It was called Boots to Business, which is offered by the Small Business Administration, SBA. And it was a two-day course. It was a great course for two reasons. One is that it's designed to help people that are interested in starting their own companies when they get out of the military, and also to teach them what advantages and benefits are available for them coming out of the military as they're going to start their own business, right? So the SBA is able to do things with veterans that are a little bit different than just non-military businesses or non-veteran businesses. It also was good because if I wanted to invest in a new business, it gave me an understanding of what I should be looking for and what I should be thinking about when I invest in a new company. Right. So there were people there that were going to start franchises. They were going to do things. But at the same time, they had people there that were going to also do that were investing with other companies. And so it was great because it gave them the opportunity to see some of the things that they need to think about, which was great. The other thing is there's a lot of, like, if people want to get out and start their own contracting business. And if they have at least, I think it's 10% disability or more, they can stand up what's called a Service Disabled Veteran Owned Small Business, SDVOSB. And that allows them to get significant advantages over other companies that are not SDVOSBs, and allows them to it allows them to compete for contracts, and it gives them the opportunity to compete for contracts with added benefits that others don't take advantage of or get to take advantage of. So those are the two things that I can think of off the top of my head that would be a benefit to someone that's looking to start out their own company is the Boots to Business course. And then anyone that has disabilities can look into SDVOSB program through the SBA or just programs through the SBA, the Small Business Administration, to get started, to get business loans, to learn about franchising and other types of businesses to get started.
And how do you personally define success?
Wow, that's great. I like that you said that. Well, I'm going to read a quote from Colin Powell, and I should have it memorized, but I'm going to read it because I love it. And it's one that is, to me, it just epitomizes success. So what Colin Powell says is there are no secrets to success. It is a result of preparation, hard work, and learning from failure. And if I could define success, that would be the way I'd look at it, because success really is learning from all of your experiences and applying your experiences. I think that we're always taught as kids that we should always remember to be the best we can. And kids come out of school, and a lot of them are just straight A students. They go to college, they get straight A's, and they don't learn about failure in life. And I think that's sad, because I think that's when we ultimately learn things, is when we fail. I think I'm sure you could share this experience. I remember the test grades that I got bad grades on more than I did the good ones, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mom and Dad gave us that stern look, and
yep.
It wasn't fun, but you learn from it, right? Well, what did I do that went wrong on that test? Maybe I didn't study hard enough, or maybe I didn't ask the right questions, or maybe I didn't take my time answering the questions. So that's business. Business is the same thing, you know? We've had some projects that we got, you know, hit pretty hard and learned from them, and we built those into our process. When I was in the Navy, we had our NATOPS manual, which was our, you know, Bible of learning how to fly an aircraft, and it had our emergency procedures and our operating procedures and systems and everything on the aircraft we were flying. And it was unfortunate to say this, but a lot of the emergency procedures we had in that book were written in blood, because a lot of guys and gals passed, unfortunately, and as a result of their experiences and what they went through. It was a new procedure we didn't know that we had to deal with. So, and that's the ultimate fear, and I don't ever want to see anything that happen ever to anyone, but it's just a fact of life, is that we learn from our mistakes. It's okay to fail. It yeah. sucks. It hurts. We don't want to fail. We get scared to fail, but we shouldn't be. It's just part of life, and it makes us better. And, you know, that's what a lot of my investors want to see, is they want to ask us right away, well, what was your worst deal? You know, what was the hardest deal for you? Where'd you lose money, and where did you learn from it? You know, and you got to be ready to answer those questions.
You're right. You know, you have to be able to fail forward. I mean, it's a feedback loop. And
yeah.
at some point you're going to fail at whatever it is that you're working towards. And you basically have two options. It's either, okay, give up and walk away on it. Or
right.
like you said, evaluate. And figure out what went wrong and how to fix it, and then, you know, take that and move forward and keep going.
It is. Everything's a learning experience. Yeah.
Well, John, this has been great, and congratulations on, you know, what you guys have going on right now. I mean, it's
thank you.
The projects that you guys have going on and the success you've seen over the past few years.
Thank you.
And, you know, I know it's going to continue to grow, and I'm looking forward to seeing that happen.
Well, I appreciate that. Just real quick, if anybody is interested in learning more about our business, and you have the contact information, but you can visit our website at www.jidinvestments.com, and that will give you kind of a rundown of what we do and kind of what I spoke about today, a lot of our projects. We have a blog on there that has information on articles we've written. So that's a good way to visit us. And then you can reach out to me anytime at my email at my first initial J, my last name Rubino at JIDinvestments.com. So yeah, if your listeners want to reach out, have a question, want to ask me something about I mentioned here on the podcast today, or they have more interest in what we're doing, I'm happy to speak with them. And for local area folks, tomorrow night I'll be in Reston at the KW from 7 to 8 p.m. Speaking about syndication. So if anybody's available tomorrow night, want to come out to the Reston KW at 7 o'clock, I'd love to say hi.
You know what? I might take you up on that one.
Yeah, you should.
I'll see what my schedule looks like, but that sounds pretty good.
Okay. Sounds good. I appreciate it. Yep.
Right. Well, John, thanks for taking the time today. And
thanks
for letting us reschedule and get this all lined up. But this has been great. And I'm sure that we could easily do, you know, a couple more of these if we were to really dive into particular pockets of things, because this felt really well, like we were just kind of skimming the surface of what.
Yeah, I welcome that. If there's something specifically we could talk about, if we want to do a commercial real estate podcast, we want to do an opportunity zone podcast, syndication business podcast, happy to set that up anytime.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Outstanding. Well, thanks for your time, Trey. I appreciate it. And I wish you and your listeners a great day.
Thank you. You as well, and have a good one.
You too.
A big thank you to our guest, and thank you for listening. To connect with our guest on LinkedIn, hear more episodes, and find additional content, please visit militarytransitionstories.com And please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast so we can continue to have amazing guests on. If you or a loved one are preparing to move or relocate, our team would love to help you regardless of where you're moving. We have a trusted network of agents across the country ready to make your move as easy as possible.